Thank you all so much for joining me for season 2, episode 3 of Recollect, Self-Segregating for Black-Only Spaces. Two Black women, PhDs in expressive arts therapies, talking about the whole body no, the matrix moment, and the Fox strategy for Black women's liberation. Natasha Thomas, PhD, is my guest in this episode, and she was the other Black woman in my cohort at Lesley University when we were getting our PhDs, which was very recently in my life. And we were the women who were trying to get in and get the hell out of there unscathed with those letters in our hands. And there were a lot of matrix bullet dodging moments and lots of revelations as our bodies said no to the bullshit and yes to the sanctity of lending our love work to Black only spaces. 6 years after we met, we are still dodging death as Black women entering white institutions, but we do it now with a keen sense of reality. In this episode, we break it down for ourselves while offering y'all some strategies for finding your wholeness. Then we laugh our asses off, and we tell each other some stories about shit that has happened, and we go off as well we should go off about structures like the nonprofit structure, and then we laugh our asses off some more before we take off for our self-care as Black women whose dreams, work, and play are evolving towards seamless. When we sign off, I'm off to the woods, and Natasha is off to play with her toddler. Oh my God. Yeah, I was just trying to clean my house, but it's warm outside, so I'm like, after we finish, I want to get out there because we had, we had our crazy, regular December, which has gotten to be this insane thing of being like 70 degrees outside. And then I think on New Year's Day, it was 80 degrees.
What?
Yeah. And then snap, a week later, the nighttime low was 19 degrees. Yeah, so that just crazy. So then today I'm like, it's weird. 60, but at least that's like in the middle. So like I can have the door open.
Yeah, 2 days ago it was below zero and today it's 40 degrees.
Ooh.
Makes no sense. No sense.
I don't miss below zero.
I do not enjoy it. It's rare here. Like usually it's like the month of January, you'll get a couple of dips below zero and that's it. So it's nothing like North Dakota. North Dakota is like, hello, below zero in October, and it'll stay that way till April.
Yeah, that's, I know. In Ithaca, it was like just a regular thing. Like friends would call me from down here, and they'd be like, what's the temperature? Because they were just always so curious about the weather there. And I'd be, no temperature. That's what I would say, there's no temperature. There's no temperature. Meaning, yeah. If you go into negative, we don't have none. We don't have a temperature. Anyway. Right. These are just discussions. It's like there's no nothing. We just hang out and then I clip it.
I love it.
Yeah, just clip it wherever it needs to be clipped or just kind of like talking about whatever's going on. Like right now here today, and I don't know what's up with you today, but I got some what's ups.
You got questions? I had a weekend of workshops that I facilitated that actually ended up being a really nice way to start the year. So I did some workshops, cultural humility workshop, but we focused it around like care and co-construction, and it was still predominantly white attended, but I still felt like we were able to keep, like, there were two out of three facilitators were Black.
Yeah.
And Valerie Blanc was the third one, actually. Oh. You know Val.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So Val facilitated alongside us, and I felt like as a team we were able to keep like Black needs centered. Like we were able to keep folks on on task that, like, this is why we're providing all this care, you know, because you've got two of the most, like, marginalized people in the room.
Yeah.
And here's how we're going to take care of each other. And it felt really cool. Like, there was something in me that went, I could do more of these. Because there was a brief period of time where I was like, I'm done working with white folks.
Yeah. What was the objective of the workshop? Yeah. What were y'all trying to get at? Or what were you guys doing, the activity or whatever?
Yeah. So the objective of it, the audience was music therapists. Mm-hmm. So the objective was to provide space for this sort of, like, necessary deep work that has to be done for any sort of, like, cultural cognizance to be reached.
Yeah.
You know, like, people are always wanting to do, you know,
yes.
Like, tell me what things I should do and tell me what, you know, resources I should be using and all of the, like, the things that I can say and do to be the right kind of person. And this workshop was like, slow down.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just go look at the timeline of music therapy mm-hmm. and pull it apart and talk about all the things that we notice that are missing and how those things make us feel and what we're realizing about our own histories as we look at this history and, like, just sit with all of it. Like, there was lots of breakout time for them to talk in small groups and then come back together. There was some solo journaling time where, like, day one, we built a playlist together, and on day two, we played that playlist while we all just sat on Zoom journaling.
Yeah.
Like, not talking to each other, but with this shared playlist that we'd created of songs to sort of, like, center ourselves and just asking ourselves deep, dark questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that this will be, like, the beginning for some of these folks, and some of them might stay in touch with each other and do continued, like, co-working sessions like that, where they just, like, sit and interrogate.
Yeah. Yeah, that is for sure. Like, you know, like, in some of the work that I be doing with people, you know, I say you can't really do that kind of work where you're trying to wield change and influence over other people's lives until you have, mm-hmm. like, really put your hand on your own. And then you have to put your hand on your own, then you have to keep it there, you know,
yes.
So that you're consistently aware of, you know, all your own, like, wounds and wants and desires that come out of those wounds and your mm-hmm. own gifts and your own, you know, just all of that. So you're constantly reevaluating, your own evolution while you're doing this work and paying attention to how the work that you're doing is actually impacting you, you know? And so
yes.
that kind of journaling and just keeping up with yourself is mm-hmm. so important, because it's like, otherwise it's like, I don't know how else to say it, but it's like, don't nobody want to hear whatever you got, you know, because you ain't even paying attention to yourself, you know? People don't want to hear it, you know? Or they can't be really shifted by it if you are, you know, coming from sort of a, like, a Western place of keeping yourself cloaked, you know, while you do the work. So your humanity is cloaked. And it's like, it's like, is it really, or are you getting away with not being vulnerable while you're doing your work and you're trying to, like, is it really cloaked?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and that came up, you know, like, the importance of vulnerability and holding each other in that. And it mm-hmm. really just, like, it gave me a little bit of hope. Because, like, this past year, white folks been letting me down all over the place.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I did not have a whole lot of, like, hope going in mm-hmm. to this workshop, if I were to be totally honest. Like, I even asked the team to design the workshop in a way that, like, the cost could be multi-tiered so that any folks that came from marginalized groups didn't have to pay as much. And in my mind, I was thinking, that way the letdown won't be as bad if this sucks. Then it's like, well, at least I didn't pay $250. I only paid $75.
I know, right? Or just be...
So then we didn't have any black folks.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
I know. Literally, the only black folks in the room were the two of us that were part of the facilitation team. But that also speaks to something, too, though.
It sure does.
I get it. Like, And I've said this to the participants in our workshop, like, Black folks are the canaries in the coal mine.
Mm-hmm.
We are leaving in droves right now, and y'all should be very concerned.
Yeah, it speaks to where I am and where you just were, which is like, mm-hmm. you know, being like, why should I? Like, what's in it for me? Where's the reciprocity? Why should I do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, why? You know, and at some point, you know, being like, for me, what I've been trying to do, and I was writing about this morning, is coming out of a year of, you know, of reconciling with myself and all kinds of stuff, and just realizing that if I'm confused, just do like all the other creatures. Don't do anything you don't want to do, and do the things you do want to do.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And without guilt. So if I find myself going, ooh, do you want to do the newsletter for the blah, 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 international 90% white folk thing? No. And take it from there. Don't take it from, no, but, you know, it probably will be beneficial to me, like, in the long run, because what? Because people respect that organization because it's mostly white? Like, what kind of internalized because what are you getting ready to say, Zelda? And so, yeah, it has really helped me to decolonize, to really kind of unravel some of my thought process to say, do you want to? No. You know, and then go, okay, well, first, let's be led by the no. Or do you want to? Yes. Let's be led by what it is you're saying you do and don't want to do. Let's let that be first without it being questioned and deconstructed for your rightness or your wrongness as a Black person, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, over the last year, this idea of, like, whole body yes or whole body no mm-hmm. has been, like, a major guiding force. And that started with, like, Black Creative Healing Season 2. Marisol Norris was our guest who used that phrase, whole body yes. And I was like, ooh, I like
Yeah.
And I started to just pay attention to what my body was doing when I would say yes to things or no to things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about like 6 months of like anecdotal data collection and realizing that I was saying yes when my whole body was like, don't, a lot.
Yeah.
I was doing it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, that's our problem, right? I mean, last night I just went into my, medical chart online to respond to a message that was from my general practitioner who is moving on. Well, she's my primary care person. She's anything but a general practitioner. I mean, she's just like this amazing human being. Mm-hmm. And she is moving on in her internal medicine practice to California. And she took the time, Black woman physician who everybody was like, I want her as my doctor, you know.
Yeah.
Took the time to write this very beautiful, meaningful letter to all of her clients, which is huge to take the time to do that. And I was like, I have never like read the letter of a doctor moving on and cried, but it's you know, that's a member of my, my sort of team for my, not just my self-care, but just my growth and development. Who it's time for her to move on.
Part of your pod.
Yeah. And being like the grace and gracefulness of that, but also knowing that, you know, we need to be witnessed physically when we are in pain so that we can get mirrored back to us from a Black woman, you know. We can get asked the questions that a Black woman would ask another Black woman. Like, what are you doing right now that you don't want to do? And that's one of the things that she asked me, was just like, you are vegan, you're all this stuff, and I've been caring for you for, at that time, she had been my doctor for a year. You got this beautiful, amazing superwoman body, and all of a sudden, you've been here 4 times, high blood pressure. Like, what the hell is going on? What are you doing? And so first she asked me all the questions, you know, the doctor questions, you know. Like, are you still doing your same exercise routine? Yes. Are you still eating the same foods? Yes. And then she was like, now let me ask you the for real question. You know? So she's like, what are you doing in your life right now that you don't want to do? And that's all it took, just a breakdown of tears. You know? And then her saying to me, after I gave her the answer, you can come to see me anytime you want. There's no judgment about you doing something that you just said you don't want to do, but you're doing that because we have the lives we have and we are psychologically working as hard as we can to get what we need to evolve in this world, to get what we want. Yeah, but something about like having somebody who is witnessing, who knows you, yeah. knows your body, you know, who can say, like you and Marisol, who can say what a whole body yes might be meaning right now to your spirit that is in your body that is saying no, you know? Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Like what is your body doing when you're saying yes, unequivocally yes, and then you're having a panic attack.
right. Or you just like are carrying so much stress around that your body can't do basic things that it's been able to do before.
Yeah.
Like carry a child. You know, exactly. Like when I miscarried in July, like that was a moment where I was like, I can't keep saying yes to people.
Yeah.
Like, that was a moment where I'm like, my body literally just like gave out.
Yeah.
I can't keep saying yes to people.
Yeah. And that, oh my God.
And it became like sorry to take us like all the way
into
all the way into it. Because it really did feel, and still to this day feels like a tectonic plate shifting moment in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there's no direct like cause effect. There's nothing that medically says you were so stressed out and that's why you miscarried. Like that's not medically what happened.
Yeah.
But just in my mind, when I think about the person I was pre that and the person that I'm attempting to become.
Yeah.
Like that felt like a necessary shift in that moment.
Yeah.
Like you've had this like ridiculous loss. I'm gonna say no to some people and I'm gonna mean it.
Hell
and
yeah.
They're gonna fucking deal.
That's right. And that's our problem is that we think that if we say no, that the people can't deal and that means something on us. And to back you up just a minute, it is a thank goodness now medically proven. That's one of the things that my Dr. Wiley Sine is her name, that she was working on. That's some of the stuff as I was working on the book Mama Bear, and I started looking at my own preterm and maternal health disparities as a Black woman. Senator Lauren Underwood, you need to look her up and listen to her. She was on the radio preaching the other day. And I was like, you better preach about the, I'm going to get this wrong, but it was like the Black Women's Maternal Health Initiative, I think is what it's called.
Okay.
But anyway, thankfully, there is now time, energy, and money because of Black women being put forth and forward to, it is medically proven, in quotes, you know. Right. You know, we always knew it. I mean, because there's other knowledge other than the research, you know, our bodies always knew it. You know, our
stress levels are killing us.
Yes, our stress levels are killing us.
And our children.
Us. Yeah. And our stress levels are directly linked to white superiority lie. I'm not going to say white supremacy because that's bullshit, you know, but to that lie. And to other ways in which the folks who believe in the lie, who benefit from it, have beaten us with that shit, put our bodies in the capitalism machine and ground our bones to make their bread, you know, literally their bread and their money, bread, you know, and the ways in which we internalize that, thinking that the only way that we can deal in this world is being responsive to that, because it's when you think about life and death and, you know, will I be able to eat? Will I be able to? And then we just like implode, you know, and we can't, you know, it's just like you can't pay your rent or your mortgage and you only got so much money. What do? You go drink. What do you do? You know, it's just like, oh my God, I could just really go there. But yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All of the stresses and the things and stuff in my body. And I love it when we have a breaking point. You know, but the good thing about the breaking point, put that shit on your refrigerator so that you don't forget. Because the breaking point, you ever have a breaking point and then you're like, that's my breaking point. And then 2 years later, you're like, wait a minute, why am I at my breaking point again? Like, how the hell did this happen?
I literally just wrote, like, this blog post that'll probably go nowhere. Like, I wrote it and then I was like, I'm not publishing that. But I just titled it My Matrix Moments. You know, the moments, like, not bullet time, not, like, glitch in the Matrix moments, but moments where... In the first film, and then again in the most recent one that came out, but that you see reality, or what Neo thinks is reality, break down, and the moment of realization that comes across his face.
Yeah.
So, like, when he's touching the mirror, and the mirror starts to take over him.
Yeah. Oh, I gotta see it.
Like, oh, my God. What is happening? How is this happening? Oh, my God. Like, this is my world now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those moments. Like... Yeah, I was writing about those moments and how much they can change, like, the entire course of your life. But how, like, they build, like, sediment on top of each other.
Yes.
And so it's, like, by the time you reach your, like, millionth Matrix moment, there's, like, how many more underneath it that are, like, informing you.
Yeah. But what's cool, though, is that when I have a revelation, and I've been, writing about this, or it's in my journals... In Recollect. So in the book that I'm working on, that praise the Lord, let me please be finished soon. I'm still living like the very little last little pieces of residue of the outcome. But every time, like, I keep thinking that there's this new thing that I'm having, this new way that I'm having revelation. But in the same way that it's like you keep re-encountering your breaking point, there's also a beautiful way that in which you have revelation. And you think it's a brand new one. But what happens is when I have a revelation now, like you were talking about the layers of sediment, it's like a drop down menu and less than like, it's not even a second. Like that knowledge and that understanding goes down through every single time I have ever had a similar moment in my life, all the way back to the beginning. So when I have that revelation and it does that, the cool thing is I feel like my spirit and my psyche is trying to tell me, hold on to this, because this change that you have just had actually changed all the other moments. So as you move forward, you know, so that you won't continue to encounter this same breaking point, so to speak. You know, it's scary as fuck, though, because I keep encountering over and over the same questions about my... you know, about my own life and survival, you know, it's like, if I don't do this, you know, like we're talking about like job shit, you know, like not wanting to work in the institutions anymore. But then sometimes being like, how do I get out of if I'm at a point where financially I can't pay the mortgage. But then there's just like ding, 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 right in front of my face. Ding, 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 ding. So-and-so's university. They want to make you associate professor of bullshit, you know.
Like, honestly, the question. So I feel like every new Matrix moment in my life has essentially boiled down to the realization that you're not safe here. This person will not defend you.
Exactly.
No one will defend you here. And so then the flip side of that, the question is, will you kill yourself for this person or this cause or this place? And the answer every fucking time is no.
No. And you gotta just hold on to that answer, because that's...
No.
No. You know, will you kill yourself? No.
Because it's not just will you die for this, it's will you kill yourself for this, because that's what's being asked of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck no.
Because that, which means you have a keen sense of reality, you know, is that...
I think so.
Yeah, is that you know that some things that appear... to be that they will nurture, provide, and protect a bullshit, because they either they won't, or maybe they will for a little while, but that will only work if they only will for a little while if you're completely aware of the fact that truly they don't nurture, provide, and protect, but that there's something in there that you can actually go in there and get. But you have to have all that awareness.
Yes, and you have to be precise about what it is you're going in there to get. Yeah. Like, this is, like, to take us back to the, like, Matrix references, this is where bullet time comes
in. I gotta see the next movie. Is it in theaters?
Yeah, but you can also get it, if you have HBO Max, you can view it there too. It's not like, it's not a perfect film, but I felt like it was nostalgic enough to take you back to the first one.
Okay.
And that it brought back, like, now I'm rewatching the first one. I got through like half of it yesterday because, you know, now I'm like, I'm in that stage of toddler momhood where I can't sit through a whole movie in a single sitting.
Exactly.
Or if I do, it's like, I gotta really plan for it. So I watched half of the first one again yesterday and I'll probably finish it tonight. Yeah. But, that's where I feel like bullet time comes in, because like you're seeing, like you develop all these skills built up out of all of your Matrix realizations, and you can see things happening in microseconds and milliseconds, and to anybody else around you, they don't see all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're seeing that. They don't see all that.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, this probably is why people react the way they do when I pull out of things.
Yes.
Or when I go, you know what? We can't work together anymore. Because they don't see the bullet time reactions.
Yes. Girl, you better preach. You better
they
preach.
Just see their good intentions and my sudden departure.
Yeah. Like, yeah. That's like me with 2 months, you know, working for 3 years to get nonprofit status. Had it for 2 months. Bye. What do you mean bye? Bye. Dissolve? What do you mean dissolve? Bye. I'll explain it to you in a longer note, but your reaction to my bye does not prevent the bye. I am not doing the nonprofit. It is antithetical to, and I didn't, there's no way to know for me, because I learned by mostly by experience, there's no way to know that the nonprofit structure is antithetical to Black women healing, self-defining, and liberating because of me not truly seeing how the nonprofit structure is the, I'm gonna say something really terrible.
It's another complex. The nonprofit industrial complex is a thing.
It's the asshole of capitalism.
The asshole of capitalism. I love it because it's so like seemingly benign to people, but it's like, do you understand
exactly
what that means?
It's like, hey, Black woman, how about, wait a minute, I gotta laugh my ass off for a second. It's like, hey, black
do what you
woman,
gotta.
How about you sign up to not make any money? It's like, it's like, wait a minute.
Like, there are some things where I can see where a nonprofit structure might provide some sort of benefit. Like, yeah. There are great grants out there. If you're like a big org,
yeah,
like, nonprofit structure might be for you. But you're right, though. If you're just like alone, Black non-male person just trying to survive and help other people survive,
yeah,
I don't know, man.
Yeah,
that seems like a con. Nonprofit system just seems like such a con, and it's hard because like I'm looking down the barrel of it, like, what is Black creative healing gonna become?
And I'm here to
and right
tell
now
you
I'm like
run.
Can we just be an ethical business? Can we just be an ethical small business?
Yes. And take it from me. I'm like, run. You can go and get that, have that experience if you want to, but I just had it. So I'm here to tell you, no, run. You know, if you want to, I'm like, wait a minute. I was happy. I've been doing this for 19 years. I was happy. And for 2 months, talk about checking in with your body. I'm like, I'm feeling a little bit of vertigo coming on. I'm feeling a little this, I'm feeling that. And I'm like, fuck no. Fuck no. No.
Mm-mm.
No. Exactly, because it's just like, okay, wait, I can't do this that way. Oh, okay. Oh, the rules say if I do this, I have to do, oh, okay. Oh, I just worked four 13-hour days. Oh, okay. I'm like, oh, hell no. No. You know? And just,
yeah. You're one person. Like, there's no way that, yeah.
Yeah, and anybody, well, not anybody, but any Black woman structures that, like you were saying, large nonprofit corporations, that got to be large nonprofit corporations because capitalism is what it is. And you're talking about the bullet time and the what aren't people seeing. There's some dead Black women bodies.
Oh.
Along that fucking timeline. Oh, hell yeah.
That's a really good point.
Yes. That nonprofit corporation that's serving Black women that got to be huge, did not get to be huge without the death of some Black women. Hmm. What kind of death am I talking about? Altruistic, bullshit, fucking altruistic death. You know, where it's like, where we get in the Time Joiner in the morning, Tuesday morning, award for, and we're in the hospital bed and they interviewing us, you know, because she half dead, but she spent her, she devoted her whole life. She didn't even have a, she didn't even have no relationship. She didn't even get to have a relationship. She just devoted her whole life to helping these children. That's bullshit. That's bullshit. Then she got duped, you know.
Yeah.
She didn't get what she deserved as a human being. And it's, and the lie that, which is part of the white superiority lie, the lie that for our people to get what our people need, that we have to kill ourselves and sacrifice. Right. We have to, somebody has to be fucking sacrificed on the cross for us to get that. That's bullshit.
Well, and that's what's so, like, maddening, because so many people buy that. So many people buy that. Like, when I, when Marisol and I stepped down from the Journal of Music Therapy, and I refused to go to any meetings, and thank God I did, because they sounded like hell. Like, every verbal report that I got, every Twitter thread that I was reading, sounded like hell for Marisol to sit in those meetings and hear people say that she just didn't want it badly enough. She just didn't care enough.
Oh, my God.
And that she... that she and I had left because we were not willing to do the work. Like, that was the narrative that they flipped on us.
That is something else. See, that's us, though. That's how we've internalized it so much.
Because there were other Black people who got on and then said that, who echoed that, who drove that nail into our coffins. Yeah. Like, excuse me?
Exactly.
We didn't care enough?
Yeah.
We didn't fucking...
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, the one tweet that I put out about the whole experience was just, I don't know where this willingness, where they, like, where they think we are, or what they think we're doing, that means we're not willing to do the work, but I'm literally out here working my ass off. I just didn't want to die for you.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And if you're gonna, it should be seamless. So your dreams work and play. Your purpose, your happiness, your... It should be fucking seamless. It's It gets to be seamless for other people. What would make the difference in it not being able to be seamless for you? You know, it needs to be friggin' seamless. Where it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, whatever
you're doing. Like, I was hearing these... Like, even the white women that we, like, wrote our letter of departure and, like, CC'd it to, they were stepping up and saying, you know, we're volunteers, we're tired, we're struggling too. And I'm like, do you not understand that we're also doing this for you? You shouldn't be tired. You shouldn't be struggling. Nobody should be feeling as though their life is collapsing because of the work that they're doing for this organization.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I used to do that thing of, like, being in the competition conversation about, you know, like, you know, like, when you call somebody and they're like, oh, I'm just so busy, I'm so stressed. You'd be like, all I'd be asking is, hey, you want to go for a walk? Oh, I wish I could. Da-da-da-da-da. Okay, hey, you want to come with me to the gym class? Oh, child, I wish I could. I'm drowning in da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm working, like I said that I'd done. I'm working. I just worked for 13-hour days. And it's like, every time I see myself even about to go there, that's how it said no about the nonprofit.
Right.
It's like, no.
Yeah.
Because your work should make you happy and energized. And so after you work, you should want to go play. You know, your play should make you want to dream. Your dreams should get you excited about new innovative things that you want to do with your work. And so then you go work.
Right.
And then your work makes you want to play and round and round and round. They're bound together, you know. And when they're not, something is amiss. Something's not right.
Yeah. Know? But we've been conditioned. Like, I don't know how many times I've been in, like, conversation with other Black women texting each other being like, haha, I'm drowning, LOL, how are you? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's okay, bitch, I'm dying.
That's the same conversation they had, each one of them being in their own row in the field, you know?
Yes!
Yeah. How you doing, bitch? Yeah. Oh, bitch, I'm dying. It's so hot out here, but I'm picking this cotton. You know, it's like, boo, you free now. Put the damn bag down. You ain't got to pick the fucking cotton. You ain't even got to tell Massa where the hell you at. Better yet, don't tell him where you at. So that if he realized that you're not keeping his machine going, you ain't keeping the cotton gin going, he won't be mad and come and kill your ass. So just go do whatever you're going to go do. Don't go and sign your name over on a bunch of federal paperwork. Saying, I am not going to make a profit. Please use me. Like, bitch, what is your problem?
Oh my God.
Exactly right.
When I sit and think of the absurdity of it all, sometimes, like, there's nothing you can do but laugh. Just be like, this is nuts.
That's fucking stupid. That's what the crows have been saying forever. I be out here sometimes sitting and they be laughing at my black ass. They're like, bitch, what are you doing?
Lord, oh yeah.
And the squirrels be throwing shit at me. They be like, wake the fuck up, you know?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. So it's a good, like today, so I was working on the book and I was so distracted by my own fucking woes that I could barely work on the book. And I had to stop. I had to stop, text that to a friend so that I could laugh at myself. It's like, okay, you're working on your memoir, which is about decolonizing, and you're so caught in your head about which way to go with this and which way to go with that in your life right now, which means your ass is colonized. That's why you're so damn confused. And you're so distracted by it that you can't write the book that's about decolonizing. It's like, ooh-wee, you something else, ain't you? You know, I had to laugh at myself. I was like, okay, yeah. I'm black. I got problems, you know?
Right. Like, we're all just walking around traumatized. We're all walking around damaged. Every single one of us.
I know. And the part that
every single one of us.
There's so much in there, Natasha, that, you know, between the growth and development from 2014 to now.
Yes.
Yeah. From the year that I said, yes, I'm going to graduate school, and all the shit that I had to make decisions about that went with that, that had to do with you going in there. Girl, you better know what you're going in there for. And you better get in there and real, real quick get out, you know, like we both did.
You sure did, too.
And we both did.
I mean, you got out there a year ahead of me, but yeah, we both did. We got out there fast.
I was like, yeah, because that's like, that's that,
Bullet time.
It's bullet time.
Gonna get a PhD in 3 fucking years. Watch me. And then you did.
Actually, I cut it a
Who
little.
Does that?
I was a little under the little under that. It wasn't even quite 3, but I was like, I'm getting in here. I'm out. Yeah, because it's like I know that it will kill me. And I also know that I'm going in there for the letters. There may be some other residual little gold dust things that I pick up along the way. But I'm very clear that it is not built for me. It's actually built to kill me. And so if there's something in there you got to get. And so I was writing about this yesterday, about the PhD years and about the institutional life. You know, it's like, if there's something that you're going in there for, you better do the best you can to be just literally like a fox. The foxes out here, it's like, oh my God, you're fucking brilliant. Unless they are sick. That's when you know a fox is sick. How do you know the fox is sick? Because
they're sloppy.
I saw it. Because it's sitting in my yard. It must be sick. Other than that, foxes calculate that shit. They be like, okay, now look. I could eat a bunny rabbit. But that chicken that's in that chicken yard is going to last me a long time. I'm happy to be pregnant. It's going to feed me. It's going to feed the baby. And it's going to feed the other little pups that are running around. And that's going to be some good food. Mm-hmm. And there's eggs associated with the situation. So the fox will say, yeah, it's not that I don't know. That dude's got a rifle and that there's barbed wire. But I've been watching that hen house for a while, and they don't see me watching it. And so I'm going to take the risk because I think, I'm pretty damn sure, I can get in there and get out unseen. And so the thing I was writing the other day is about getting in and out of Lesley University is that the thing that is good is it lets other Black women know that it's possible. The thing that's not so good is it heightens the security for the white people.
It sure does.
Because they're like, real good. We can't let that shit happen. That bitch got in here, she got fucking out. And we didn't even see her do it. She was sitting at the damn hooding ceremony. And we're like, wait, what? hold on a second. How did that happen? And then they're like, any others of them that get in here, because the purpose of them getting in here is that they truly believe in it. And they gonna spend money they don't even have. They're middle class. They keep the system running.
Oh, I'll be in debt for years.
Yes.
Decades.
Yes. It's like we have to keep
this them. PhD put me in debt.
Exactly. We have decades. To keep them in here because then they'll keep paying that fucking tuition. You know, we can't let them get in and get out. Like, what the hell? Yeah. So anyway. Yeah. And I'm sitting up here trying to make some decisions right now and feeling like, wait, am I crossing the same bridge that I crossed 2 years ago? There's nothing that make you feel more insane than to ask yourself than to be in a life dilemma. So this one is about home, because you know I've been working on love, home, and work in the ways that the white superior already lie externally and internally, you know, that I'm have been in response to all the wrong shit, you know. So now every time I have some big dilemma, I'm trying to look at what's amiss, you know, what kind of lies are amiss, and to ask myself, much like we were saying, is to ask myself, what do I want? Is there anything here that's antithetical to what I want? And then to really get myself to that want does not equal what is best for this one, that one, that one, that one. No, what do you want? What do your what's your heart's desire? What makes you feel happy when you think about it? This is like a bird of fox, or no, probably not a fox unless it's sick. There's like something under that open window walking around. I'm so tempted to go look and see what it is. Because there's birds playing, but there's also some four-legged thing.
Something else. Yeah.
Yeah. Might be somebody's dog, or it might be one of the chickens. But anyway, yeah, I'm like, do I stay put? Do I remember I was in the process of deciding if I wanted to move to Atlanta or not? Mm-hmm. You know? And so I'm working on some stuff right now because I took a 2-year detour of seriously working through some doubt when it came to love. Did all of the processes with that. And I'm like, yay, I learned all this stuff. I had all these revelations. I see the bullets now. I can dodge them, you know?
Yep, there you go.
Yeah, I figured all that out. And it now I'm back in the situation where I'm like, oh, when it comes to home, you know, why am I back here? Why am I back at this house? Because I'm back at this house. I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah.
But it's like, why are you back? You know, and then to say, do you want to be here? You know, is the only thing that's keeping you from going elsewhere the fact that you are afraid of what will happen because you have lied to yourself that this equals security? So it does in some ways. Of course, a roof over your head equals security. We know that. We're indigenous enough to know you got to, you know, build your tent before it starts raining.
Right?
You know, we know that. But it's like, but is that what's happening? Is it that you can't get another roof over your head? It's like, no, that ain't it. Okay, then what's amiss? What's going
on? What's the deal?
What's going on in your brain? Yeah. 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 And so anyway, so I'm gotta be with that. You know, don't take a long time to figure it out. It just takes a little quiet time to have a revelation. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm here for quiet times. Like that's probably my favorite thing of all the leaving I've done in the last year and all of the no's I've said is that it's given me time to just sit with myself and do absolutely fucking nothing. I'm listening to audiobooks. I bought one of those fancy little eye pillows. Sometimes I just lay down.
Yes.
And I don't sleep. I just lay there.
Yes.
And it's wonderful. Because my body needs it. My mind needs it. Like, it's just to reintegrate rest as part of a natural, just like sleeping and eating.
Yes.
I need to go stare at a wall for a bit. I need to. I will be no good to anybody, myself included, if I don't get this time.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that something?
And I'm not going to argue that with someone.
Don't argue that with anybody. And if anybody wants to argue it, they could just stand there and argue and you walk away, mm-hmm. you know. And those kind of right. practices, when you keep them in place no matter what, and I'm thinking about my mm-hmm. last love relationship, it was so important for me to have entered or re-entered that relationship with my self-care practices were already in place. Mm-hmm. So it's like if all of the battles, or if 90% of the battles are over me taking care of myself, then it's like, now it's about you having the courage to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. I cannot allow myself to be at stake.
Right. Right.
There's no, one of the therapists said it so beautifully, and she's just like, just keep saying that. There is no connection yeah. that is worth your self-preservation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ooh, so beautifully put. Because, of course, I'm thinking about love, homework, and my processes this year. And I'm like, that is yeah. so beautifully put for any relationship. Relationship with home, relationship with work, relationship with other people, friends, anybody.
Yeah.
That there's yeah. no connection that's worth your self-preservation. Because what's
that's
the point?
That's funny. My therapist's little gem that I always keep with me is this worth the amount of time and energy I am expending on it?
Yeah, and yes.
The answer is very rarely yes.
I know, right?
Yeah. You know? And so it comes through, like when you start to think about how deep it goes, you start to notice it in little things like hyper explaining yourself in text messages when all you had to say is, I'm leaving, or I'm going to do this. I'll be back at this time.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't need to be giving you all these details. Why am I giving you all these details? Because somebody told me that I had to explain myself enough times that I've started hyper doing it without anyone telling me.
Exactly. I know, right? Yeah. It's like it's
thinking
like,
I have to give you all this information, all these justifications. No, I don't.
Exactly. It's like, I don't have to do that. I'm worthy of what's that? Combahee River statement?
Yeah, the Combahee River Collective statement.
Yeah, and one of them is I am inherently worthy.
Mm-hmm.
Period. There's not
done.
There's not a comma and a semicolon. None of that after that. You know that
yep.
Black women's worth is inherent. Period.
Yeah.
You know.
Done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so one of the huge things that came out of these reconciliation processes for me last year with love, home, and work. And then I went silent. I had a week of silence. I don't know if I told you about that.
You mentioned that, like total silence.
Oh, my
yeah.
God. It was so powerful. Who knew? I did not know. I went into the week of silence, just like I do with any processes, going, well, what do you expect to find? I don't expect to find anything because expectation can prevent me from seeing whatever's there, you know. But what do you think? I don't know. I'm just going in there. I'm just going quiet.
Yeah.
A lot of things. But here are some main things that came out of that. One, I was like, oh, I've actually done this lots of times in my life. I thought I was like, and this is a first. And I'm like, girl, this ain't no first. You know, time that you it's something that's actually part of your makeup, clearly. I did it once as a child when my household, it was out of control, especially with the abuse and everything else. And
right.
I went quiet for a while. You know, one of the things I started doing was going to the mulberry tree and just sitting in the mulberry tree, you know, and just like, where is Zelda? What is Zelda doing? I'm just not saying anything, not even thinking about process or any of that. Just went quiet, you know, did it another time when I left home when I was 18 and got on a plane for the first time and went, you know, to Virginia. I walked on the beach every day for an entire week. I never talked to another human being. It just needed to happen, and it happened. I did it when I went to Kentucky when my son was two, And I, you know, lived off the grid with Minnie, and we were like communicating without talking, you know? And so anyway, so there I was for a week, just quiet, you know, not talking to other people. It made me want to sing because I'm by myself. So I was in the house. I was singing, and I'd forgotten that, how much I love to sing. Oh my God, singing, like singing as expression. Like,
yes.
Yeah. And then I was like, the other thing that the huge thing that came for me is that I have been walking around telling people this about myself, that I am a runner, working through all of these reconciliation processes with myself, letting that be the main thing is not to run because you are a runner. When you are quiet, the truth, you don't have to seek it. It's just fucking sitting there. And sometimes
it's right there.
It'll just break you down in tears. I am everything but a runner. That shit was put in my head by the people who were designed to nurture, provide, and protect me, but through the DNA of the abuses that we all suffered as Black people, they were doing the opposite, you know, were acting out their pains on me and not nurturing, providing, and protecting. And then trying to protect the lies that they were telling about the abuse. And so you got one that's just like when a slave runs away. You got one that's fucking left, which is the most powerful, amazing, beautiful, graceful fucking thing that human being can do. She did not turn around and do harm. She did not pick up a gun and try to kill her father.
Yeah.
She left. And my parents embedded it deep in my brain and all my siblings that she is a runner. She is a runaway. She left. She is a runner. She can't deal with confrontation. She can't do this. She's this. She's that.
Yes.
And it has been in here. I'm 56 fucking years old. Thank goodness that revelation. And thank goodness for the relationship that I was just in. Because to have somebody for me to say that and go, something ain't right about me saying that all the time, because it's getting used against me. And some of the stuff that's getting used against me is not true. It's good to begin to question oneself and then to go quiet and go, holy shit, I have fortuitiveness like a motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
It's the opposite of running.
Yeah.
I'm so sturdy that hurricane winds blow and I barely move. And then when I'm ready to move, I kind of pick up my roots and walk, you know? And so anyway, but all of those things that get, I mean, for me, that's just like one of the things, but it's so huge to figure that out before, while I'm still here in this life and I can do shit, you know, but to say no, boo. And you ain't the only Black woman walking around thinking that. You know, when we say, no, I'm leaving, you ain't got to explain to nobody, but we be evaluating that stuff like, oh, maybe I should stay because da da da, maybe I should stay because, and it's like, you don't want to be there. You have the freedom.
It's serving no one for you to be there.
Exactly. You have the freedom without explanation to go, I'm going over there. I'm sorry. Bye.
Right. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even have to say you're sorry.
Go. I was just going to say, not even I'm sorry. Just bye. You know, that's a freedom I afford others. Why was I holding on to it in my head to not afford that to myself?
You know?
Yeah.
And it makes me angry that we have to do that and that we have to leave and say no to each other so often, like to our immediate families, to our families of origin, because the system has damaged us so badly that, like, in order to reconnect to ourselves, we have to work around sometimes the people closest to us.
How about that?
It makes me fucking mad. Like, here I am trying to connect to my Blackness, and here's the direct line, and I can't talk to you about this.
Yeah.
I can't. You're supposed to be my direct tie and I can't work with you.
I felt like that about trying to find a black female partner. You know, yeah. I suffer a lot of criticism from other people about that. And I have, you know, in the past year, turned them off. Like, you don't, that, you know, that's the other thing. It's like, you do not have to hear anything you don't want to hear. You know, we know how to do that. You turn people, you right. just stop listening.
Because you know yourself. You're the expert on yourself. You know what's worked for you and what hasn't worked. You know.
Exactly. And I'm like, I'm trying to stay in a place where I don't want any of my energies going toward healing white women. I can't even hardly find a partner because we are so broken. And I understand the ways in which we are broken. But if I find myself, I do often find myself in jobs, which you have heard about this before, with me having a particular supervisor and other things, and with other black people, and even just trying to find partnership and dating, you know, and coming across my own sisters who I see, I'm trying to figure out how to best say this, ways in which it's just like, I can't partner with you because you're not even aware. It's one thing to have shit. Like, we all have shit. I have shit. You know, my belonging issues, my this issues, my that issues, yes, I have shit. And I know where it comes from. And so it's the shit that I'm working to keep managed so that I can have lovely, the relationships that I have in my life are lovely right. relationships. Mostly because I'm mining my shit. You know, I'm taking yes. care of my shit. But trying to find partnership with someone, with a black woman who is paying attention to her shit so that she is yeah. not extending and throwing forward right. the pains of abuse like my parents did.
Right.
But is instead saying, in terms of relationship, which is all we're doing here in this life, the buck stops with me. Yes, mm-hmm. this stuff happened to me, but I got to keep it managed like crazy because, and really stay, this is what we're talking about in the beginning, of really stay mindful of my own shit that I'm walking around with in this life and the ways this stuff has impacted me and impacting me so yes. that I can actually have relationships where it's just not bleeding over into them so I can help other people right. and do my job. You know, and go to work without abusing my coworkers or my
yes,
yeah. So, yeah. So anyway, it's rough because we have internalized it more than, I mean, of course we've internalized it in more than them right. because they are the benefactors. You know, white people are the benefactors,
right.
and we are the thing keeping mm-hmm. the machine running. There are more of us than there are of them. So if they mm-hmm. are benefiting, it's because we believe it. We believe the lie. I just need to pause right there. Wow. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just need yep. to be with all that. That was a drop. I just had one of them drop down menu revelations where it was just
like, yes. Yeah. There it goes. There it goes. Yeah. Because yeah. we've bought it.
Yeah.
And that honestly, like, Bernie and I have talked about the fact that, like, if we had never met prior to me, like, coming fully into awareness of all the lies I've been told as a black femme and all of the, like, if we were to meet now, that we would probably not be together.
Yeah.
But because we met when we did,
yeah.
when both of us were in this place where we were, like, trying to figure out our multiracial identities and having conversations with each other and realizing these points of connection and, you know, like, we just naturally came together and it has worked out
yeah.
that we are both doing our own work together. But I don't know that that would happen again.
Yeah. With these times are so like, yeah. Yeah. There's white people in the background saying things like, you know, you're undoing, you're redoing segregation.
Like, no, we're trying to, like, like fucking heal ourselves.
And I'm like, well, that's one thing to be, it's interesting to hear
we're
that.
We're trying to quarantine is what we're trying to do.
Hello? Thank you. Like the disease is spreading and we're trying to, create true safety and true biomes for growing and being nurtured and growing and reaching and evolving. Mm-hmm. And that can't happen if there's a continuously encroaching weed, you know. And it's one thing to it's one thing for any creature to be segregated. It's another thing for a creature to segregate. One has inherent worth involved in it. My desire to say I need to segregate, that could be alone and take a nap like we were talking about, or that could be like this is only for Black women,
right? Cultivating Black only spaces, like when I pulled out of all these other things, that was an act of self-segregating. I'm going to only work, I'm going to prioritize my Black folks.
Right.
I'm going to do it.
Right.
And it's, I think every interracial relationship is a grand experiment.
But I think
the ones that make it are the ones that figure out how to still hold the most marginalized person in the room, who's usually the Blackest, queerest, and disabled. Like, non-Christian, how to hold that person at the center.
Yes.
Those are the ones that make it.
You better preach. You better preach.
Like, you got to figure out how to do that. How do you hold the most marginalized person in the room at the center? Because that benefits everybody.
Yeah.
We see so many interracial relationships that go south, or their kids turn out to be absolute assholes.
Yes.
Because they've bought into the white side.
Yes.
And they're prioritizing the well-being of the most privileged person in the room.
Yes.
And then everybody suffers.
Exactly.
Half the time they can't see it, but everybody loses.
Yeah.
When you do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody loses.
Yeah. And the continuing and continuous arguments that can only be carried on if you participate of, look, you know, you don't get to have more than me. Da 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 da. And to have to explain to somebody that we live in America, you know, it's like that will cause a person to show up at urgent care with vertigo, with high blood pressure, with it's like nobody, because to choose to explain that to someone and to choose to be in those consistent battles is to choose to be sick, is to choose to be the fox in the daytime sitting in the yard with mange where everybody can see where you are now. You thought you were vulnerable before. Now you're really vulnerable
for real.
because you're so sick that you're visible to the predators. Damn.
But that's the thing that like has to be broken.
Yes.
That's the thing that's the hardest to break, because when you decide to break away, they start talking. Like the machines, the weapons, everything fires up. And it takes everything inside you to be like, do not engage, do not engage, do not engage. Because the minute you engage, you're sucked back down.
I blocked. I had to do that recently with an individual. And I could for a long time. And then every now and then I feel the surge of it. I can spiritually feel the
hooks,
the resistance, the conversation, the backstabbing, the all of this stuff. But I created a perimeter around myself, and I've had to do that before in my life, and I've been judged for it, and I worked hard not to internalize the judgment of so I recently dealt with some judgment of, you just block that person, like they can't call you, they can't, there's no social media, no nothing. And I'm like, why is this of, so I had to say to another individual, why is this of concern to you? That's the bigger question. Oof. And it was like, I must've thrown down the, you know how they used to in the old days, throw down their glove or whatever to say, I want to do a duel with you. And then I cut them off. Cause I was like, I'm not getting ready to fight you, who I don't know you that well. You're not looking at whatever it is that you're projecting on me, because you don't know me that well. And you're coming to me to go off on me about me cutting someone up.
Like,
you don't see the whole thing about the bullets?
That's a bullet time.
Exactly.
Moment.
We're moving at different speeds. Mm-hmm. And I'm not getting ready to explain to you what I see.
Yeah.
If you can't see it and you're jealous that I can see something you can't see, you go work that shit out.
Right. Deal with your shit.
Exactly. But don't come to me saying, wait, you just cutting this person off? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that that's not the Buddhist way? That's not the spiritual way? That's not the... I'm like, you're not getting ready to gaslight me on that shit.
Well, and the thing, too, that people often don't realize about, like, any sort of harm reduction or, like, any of those types of measures is that the whole point of transformative justice or anything like that is not to say that we all deserve to be in each other's circles all the time.
Thank you.
That's not the point.
Right.
You can believe that no one deserves to be thrown away and still say, you don't get to be in my circle.
Exactly. Gardening will teach you that.
That's, yeah.
Sitting on your front porch and watching nature will teach you that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are plants where if you put that, it's not saying that all these plants don't deserve to be here. But
right,
if you put this plant next to this tomato plant,
it will kill it.
The tomato vine will just, you'll come in the morning and be, what the hell happened? Things on the damn ground.
Hmm.
Other plant is happy as hell.
Yeah, living the best life.
Reaching for the sun, swaying in the breeze, is happy. You know, going, I don't know what happened to that damn tomato plant, but I'm just sure it's
but I'm fine.
And that doesn't mean that they are not both valuable, beautiful, amazing plants, but it does not get explained. It's simply, this can't be next to that, period.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And people want to make it like the whole system, the superiority lie is to say that because these two things can't be next to each other, therefore one must be superior. No.
Exactly. No. Exactly.
Two things cannot dwell well together for other reasons than superiority.
Exactly. Yeah, just because it is ecologically not sound, period.
That's it.
We use lots of periods.
But it's like, it is like you say, when you get to this point where you're like, if I have to explain this to you, I'm losing valuable time that I could be spending tending to the things that don't need to be explained.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And every moment that I don't do that, something in me dies.
Right. I've been calling.
So then there's that question again. Am I going to kill myself for you? No, I will not.
Exactly. And it's the gaslighting that'll try to get you, because we all want to belong. And so that's the thing that I've had to resist. I mean, I got called everything but a child of God in the last year as I left things that did not serve me.
Yeah.
You know, and, but I'm happy. And, you know, what's your blood pressure? I got asked a month ago. Oh, you know, by somebody who's raising my blood pressure. Oh, what's your blood pressure now? I'm like, it is back to normal. Did you want me to lie to you?
Because I saved my own life.
Thank you. Because I saved my life. And did you want me to lie to you and say, oh, it's still real bad. It wasn't you. It's me. I just don't know how to take care of myself.
That's the thing that I need to stop doing now. That's the thing I need to stop doing now. Because when, like, the people that I do still get stuck in those hyper-explainy places.
Yeah.
I'll lean on things like, oh yeah, you know, this is me. This is a me thing. I'll figure it out. You don't, you know, because I'm like trying not to hyper explain.
Yeah.
So then I jump to over accountability.
Yes. I do that too.
And that's no good either. And I need to stop doing that because sometimes I don't have to explain it.
And you wanna...
Even if the explaining is to take responsibility for it, I don't have to do that either.
No, because you know the trap. So if you're if you're the responsible party, you're the party to blame.
Exactly. They are absolved.
Exactly.
And I watch it happen over and over and over again. And I go, wow, you really can't take responsibility for shit. I got to stop beating you to the punch then.
Yeah. Yeah. Just let it fall on the floor. You know, just be like, okay, well, I'm working hard. I'm trying. I'm doing the things to try to make, you know, whether it's this committee or this relationship or this, you know, whatever kind of relationship it is, whether it's work or whatever you're doing with a friend or whatever, you know, it's like if you're doing your work to try to make it work and the other person isn't, then at some point, unless they can meet, you have to insist on reciprocity, which is also a Black feminist thing. It's actually just a real life thing that, you know, Black feminists call for.
Most things in Black feminism are just straight up real talk.
Yeah.
Like, this is how it is.
Yeah, it's just like how life operates, which is there has to be reciprocity, otherwise the thing dies. You know, so it's
like... That's just the world.
Yeah, exactly. If you're there is no relationship, you know, so there is no relating, there is no reciprocity, so there's no relationship if one person is doing all the work.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Period. There just isn't. So we could pretend like there is, we can label it, we can say... You know, well, she's still in the committee. She's still on this committee. It's like she's sitting there, but she's doing all the work. So she's not actually on the committee. She is the committee, you know? Yeah. Like, y'all just lying. Anyway.
How often does that happen? Ooh. How often does that happen? Well, and you've heard me even just like recently in like emails being like, I'm going to emails and meetings being like, I am intentionally not going to do too much. So I'm going to hold y'all to holding me accountable to not doing too much. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to come back to you and be like, hey, this needs to be done. You doing it?
Exactly.
You know?
Ooh, yes, child. Well, on that note, it is time for me to go for my walk. And speaking of like self-care, I have been loving like every day going for a walk. And that's some of the stuff that has kept me so steady and also been a great Geiger counter for is something good for me or not. If things try to pull me away from my self-care and it's like, well, if you cared about this, you'd stop caring about this thing over here that's good for you. Then I'm like, okay, nope, next. You know,
yeah. And for me, I'm gonna go hang out with my 3-year-old, who is also a great barometer for when I'm not all right. When my kid wants to hang out with me and I don't want to because I'm too burnt out to hang out with my own child, then something is very wrong.
Yeah.
You know,
I love that. I love those barometers. Yeah, I want everybody to have one.
Right? Everybody deserves a barometer that they can trust. You
know? Exactly. So they could say, it's to this, it's to that. Hey, what do I need? Oh, I don't want to do that. Oh, I do want to do this. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Natasha.
Before we go, do you need?
Yes.
Oh.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I appreciate you so much. And I want the audience of Recollect to know that Black Creative Healing is something that you started that I'm a part of, that I met you when we were doing the PhD together as the Black women in the cohort, and that we got in there, we got the fuck out, we got what we went in there to get, and that you started Black Creative Healing. But I want you to tell the audience a little bit about that and anything that you want them to have or for them to throw back to you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, depending on when this airs, blackcreativehealing.com should hopefully be live. It's just, I just need to pull the trigger. Yeah. I'm just sitting there going, I like it, but I'm not ready. So Black Creative Healing is a platform dedicated to radical conversations, mindful collaboration, and holistic visioning, centering Black communities. And it started as a, I'm so good at that now. It started as a video blog, and you were part of those early video blog days. And then as it started to get bigger, we pivoted to a podcast and added Adonike Webb, who is another dear friend of mine, a Black music therapist in the Black Music Therapy Network, which now like sort of hosts the podcast or is like our community sponsor that we're like nested under, but also alongside. We're figuring it out. But that's sort of what it's been. But then alongside that, we've done live events and we've got the social media engagement workbooks that we've created. And now we're gearing up for this big retreat. And so in due time, the retreat page will be open and 45 people, cause we're keeping it limited to start, 45 Black folks will come together and build something magical and beautiful and wonderful. And it's going to be dope as hell.
Yeah, it sure is. But I can't wait. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm super excited. We've got, you know, 2 out of 3 of the grants we applied for, we got, and who knows, maybe not getting that third one is a blessing in disguise, you know?
You know?
That was the one that felt the most non-profit-y. Like, that was the one that felt the most, like, you gotta check all these boxes, and you gotta do all the things, and the red tape.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so now we're in this place where, you know, we're cultivating what's gonna be, like, 8 beautiful hours spread over 2 days, and we're looking at how we can best take care of each other as we plan and make space for all the participants to feel taken care of, held, and be able to hold each other as we sort of co-construct the thing.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I can't wait. I love that it's going to happen in the summer months and that we can all be outside and enjoy and be with ourselves creatively healing. And
yes.
Thank you, Dr. Natasha Thomas. You are brilliant.
Thank you,
and
Dr.
beautiful,
Zelda-Locker.
And you deserve all that there is to be had that you want. Yes.
As do you, friend. As do you.
All right. I love you.
Love you. We'll talk again soon.
Bye.
Bye.
I also want to give a nod and a shout out in this episode to some brilliant Black women who we mentioned, Marisol Norris, PhD, Dr. Wally Sine, Representative Lauren Underwood, and Adonike Webb, PhD. So don't forget, Recollect is listener supported. Become a monthly sustainer.